5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
I know you're gonna dig this.
You make $5 million a year. I'm a jerk on the radio, I know better.
Those are facts. Print that. Tweet that.
I don't like people or teams or products that dodge the heavy lifting.
If you don't like what we say or anybody says, here's what I would suggest. Get a rating.
The idea that you preface your opinion by what your identity is to me insane.
You gotta be kidding me. You can't run this clown out of town fast enough.
This man is a disgrace. He's throwing everything away. Get him the hell out.
That is a take. It's a strong take. It's one of the best takes ever.
Welcome to the Barrett Sports Media Podcast. Now, here's your host, Jason Barrett.
Season 4 of the Barrett Sports Media Podcast has arrived, and I'm glad to be back. This is Jason Barrett. Glad to have you here. If you're new to the podcast, welcome. If you've listened before, thanks for the return and remaining supportive. It's been a while since we last connected. The written work on sportsradiopd.com, client projects, and this little thing you may have heard about called the 2019 BSM Summit have occupied a ton of my time. I'm sure you're familiar with that conference. I've only promoted it nonstop and probably drove you nuts on social media with it. Fortunately, though, during my travels around the country during the fall of 2018, I was able to record a number of conversations with some talented personalities, and I'm thrilled to be back behind the microphone sharing those conversations with you about sports radio business. One thing I do want to pass along that I think you'll like, especially if you're not able to be in Los Angeles for the BSM Summit. We're recording some of the sessions on stage and making them available later this season on season 4 of the Barrett Sports Media Podcast. So keep your eyes out for that in the weeks and months ahead. Also, if there are certain people in the sports radio business who you'd like to hear on a future episode, I always welcome suggestions. You could do so by email, jbarrett@sportsradiopd.com, or you could find me on Twitter @sportsradiopd. Similar to season 3, you'll notice if you've been to sportsradiopd.com or on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, or our Stitcher feed, that we've decided again to release 5 episodes at once. I like the way that was done last year. I saw increased listening to all of our prior episodes, so we're going to stick with that for the time being. I actually had a guy named Cameron in Australia last season send me a tweet letting me know he had binge listened to 26 episodes, which blew me away. That's pretty cool. It's also a good reminder that you never know who's listening or where your content's being consumed. So thank you for doing that, Cameron, and I hope more of you can find 15 hours to consume our content, because I don't know how he did it, but kudos to him. You'll also notice the latest rollout of episodes for season 4 include conversations with Vic Lombardi of Altitude Sports 92.5 in Denver, Chuck Oliver of 680 The Fan in Atlanta, Kyle Bailey of WFNZ in Charlotte, Adam Schein of SiriusXM's Mad Dog Sports Radio, and this episode you're listening to now, our conversation with Phil Mackey of Score North, formerly 1500 ESPN in Minneapolis. Now, Phil's a guy I've known for a few years. He's got a great attitude, positive outlook, and a burning passion for the business. We actually chatted before Hubbard Minneapolis decided they were going to employ a digital-first approach with the launch of Score North. But there was plenty to tackle over the span of 29 minutes together, so I'm going to step aside and let you enjoy the first conversation of Season 4 of the Barrett Sports Media Podcast, my chat with Score North's head of content, Phil Mackey.
3, 2, 1.
Early days, Phil Mackey breaking into radio. How exactly did you get started in sports radio?
I almost got fired my second day on the job. My first ever radio gig. So I don't know, and I don't know how many.
You're not going to tell me you went on a mic and started cracking expletives, right?
No, the expletives came after I was off microphone. I started at a radio station, KRWC AM 1360 in Buffalo, Minnesota, which is, I don't know, 45 minutes west of downtown Minneapolis. And this is, and I'm sure a lot of guys have this story, where it's small town radio. There's 4 or 5 employees. There's a salesperson who's also the janitor, who's also, you know, doing tradio from 6 o'clock until 8 o'clock. In fact, I remember before I got hired, I walked in looking for an internship. And they said, well, we don't have internships, but we are looking for someone to do high school sports play-by-play, and we've seen you play high school. This is just out of high school.
Yep.
This is my first year in college. And they had seen me play high school sports, so they knew that I knew something about sports at least. And they literally gave me like $40, which is pretty good pay, $40 a game when as a 19-year-old.
You got paid. That's a start.
Yeah, so we did one game. It was me and a guy named Lynn Shepley, classic old-time radio guy. We're here live at the high school baseball, you know, blah, 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 right? And I was kind of the color commentator and doing, I don't know, it was state tournament time, so deliver score updates and whatnot. My second day on the job, I was supposed to do the same thing for a town ball baseball game, and Lynn Shepley called in sick at the last minute. So, hey, kid, you're doing a three-hour game solo. You have to go set up the Marty, set up the antenna, drive a wheel over the base of the antenna with the station bus. I think it was one of those, just like a short, old 1980s antique buses, right? So anyways, long story longer, I'm fearful for my life that I have to go on the microphone alone as a 19-year-old. I've never driven anything other than a Camry at that point, and I've only been driving for 3 years, right? So I'm driving a company vehicle, and it's a bus with equipment in it. We get everything set up. The station manager helps me set everything up. And of course, calling a game in which you don't know any of the players, there's nothing. You'd have a better chance calling a major league game when you're 19 years old because you can at least know something right about the players and you can extrapolate between pitches. Here, it's like you don't know the second baseman. You don't know. You're looking down at your cheat sheet. So I get through the nervous three-hour experience, and they shut all the lights off. It's a four-field complex. There's one game going on, and it's a softball game. And there is, in the middle, there's one of those concession stands with, you know, four sides and kind of a pointed roof that comes down.
Right.
So I pack all the equipment. And actually what happened was I drove my Camry to the game, and the station manager helped me set up. He drove the bus. And then he said, hey, I'm not going to stick around for the game. I'll just drive your Camry back, and then you can pack this stuff in the bus. And that was my experience riding the bus. So we get in, I pack up all the equipment, put it in the bus, and I start to back this thing up. You know, it's parked right next to the field. So back it up, try to get it going the right direction. And here I go. All right, just got done with my first solo game. I'm a play-by-play guy, baby. This is awesome. Like, now it's on to ESPN pretty soon, right? And I'm as thrilled as I've ever been in my life. And all of a sudden, as I start to creep around the corner of this concession stand, the bus, it's like it was like it hit a boulder or something, just a jolt. And as it turns out, I had never driven anything where you had to worry about how tall it was. I lodged the bus under the overhang of the concession stand, and tiles start falling off. It wound up being a couple $1,000s worth of damage to the concession stand and the bus. And I thought, well, this is the end, right?
And you're working for a small town operator at this point who probably doesn't have a few. This isn't like major companies who can afford it.
So I made the crying phone call back to the station and explained it and thought, well, this is the end of whatever I thought was going to be an internship or radio career. And Joe Carlson was the station manager's name. And he fell on the grenade. He took the blame and said, I shouldn't have put you in that spot. I should have had someone helping you or whatever. He didn't even take it out of my paycheck, I don't think.
Which is nice.
Just ate the cost.
How long were you at that station?
I did two summers of high school baseball and amateur baseball play-by-play. And then the second summer, I also overlapped as it was for college credit, an internship at KFAN in the Twin Cities, which wound up being an 11-month internship. So I guess free advice to any young broadcasters, don't wait until you're done with college to get a job or an internship. Just get in the – if you're 19 years old, just get in the door.
Right. Even if you don't wind up working right then, you build a few relationships, which may come in handy 3-4 years from now.
Yeah. I actually, my initial major at the University of Minnesota was going to be broadcast journalism and go learn how to put together a radio broadcast, whatever, learn how to run a mixing board, whatever. And I realized as I'm a sophomore working at a major radio station, having already done 2 years of at least small market play-by-play, this is better than a college education, right? This is on the job training and experience. So free advice. If you're a young dude in college or a young woman, go just start knocking on doors and go work somewhere.
You mentioned that you spent 11 months interning at KFAN, and then that's ultimately when you got into the big city, Minneapolis. That's where you started. Take me through the beginning of that journey. You spent some time there. What was that like?
It was an incredible experience. I wound up spending 5 years total at KFAN from 2005 through 2010. And half of that was me still in college. And so I just, you know, I guess the formula, if you will, to get noticed or wind up getting a full-time job is outwork the people around you and add value in different places. And mm-hmm. I just sort of, I tried to live by that motto. I was also a startup guy. I started a couple businesses and I wound up playing poker for a living for a couple years mm-hmm. because I wasn't making money and paying rent in radio, but I loved it and I wanted to keep working in it. And so I was one of the original founders of the Minnesota State Poker Tour, which became the Mid-States Poker Tour. I'm not involved anymore, but I learned, I guess, how to hustle. I learned how to do a million different things. And I also learned that until you get to the point where you have your own show or you're climbing a ladder in a larger market with full-time gigs, you're not going to be able to make a decent living either. So I just learned business and I learned how to have a 30,000 foot view of this industry and other industries and models. And so I wound up doing part-time production, Sunday night baseball, and that turned into producing a weeknight show. At the time it was called Sludge and Lake. Mm-hmm. And now Sludge Corey Cove has a wildly successful morning show mm-hmm. on, which is our competitor, KFAN. And Henry Lake has been in Kansas City for 5 years. He's been a Twin Cities guy. And so it's, I guess long answer longer. I wound up in 2010 just benefiting from circumstance. Some of it's luck, some of it's work your butt off to get to a certain point. And AM 1500 was flipping to an ESPN format. And they were looking for young talent and hungry talent and probably inexpensive talent to pair right. with some of their heritage older guys like Patrick Royce. He's a legendary columnist. And I'll never forget sitting down in a meeting with Patrick Royce and our general manager, Dan Seaman, in 2010. And they were interested in, and Tom Pelissero was another guy they brought in. He's now mm-hmm. at the NFL Network, and him and I worked together for a number of years launching digital content. But we sat down, and I had read Patrick Royce's column since I was 7 years old. My dad used to show me Patrick Royce's columns as a kid, so he was just a legend in my mind.
Yep.
And we're sitting down in a coffee shop across the street from the 1500 ESPN studios, and the general manager walks in. It's the first time I had ever had a face-to-face with Royce other than just running into him in press boxes, and he had no idea who I was. And so general manager walks in and it's the three of us and he says, I just want to introduce you guys. I'm going to leave now and you guys can figure out if you want to do a show together, which is really, Patrick, you can figure out if you like this kid at this coffee shop to figure it out.
Right.
And he's got the gravelly voice and he said, I think we got to get a little younger and you're kind of a stat geek baseball guy and I'm a little old school. And what do you say? I'm like, yes. and so that was my start of now almost a decade at 1500 ESPN and Harbor Broadcast.
So you mentioned almost a decade. What is the biggest difference between 1500 then and 1500 now?
I think the biggest difference has to do with the way in which people consume content in general, independent of 1500 ESPN. We get beat in the radio ratings. And so, I mean, there's different reasons, AM versus FM, mm-hmm. sports rights, non-sports rights. It doesn't even really matter what the reasons are. We have looked at the landscape here for the last couple of years and said, how do we reach people with content? And so I guess my answer to that question is the way in which we think about delivering content to people has changed. And that's how 1500 ESPN has changed. And that's how we're planning on changing even more going forward, too. Mm-hmm. That it's if you're sitting in an AM radio boat, and at some point maybe an FM radio boat, and that's your entire business model, and whether you're a host, a director of sales, whether you're a producer, everyone should be thinking about this stuff. Mm-hmm. If your entire model is based on AM radio and AM radio production and AM radio distribution, you're not looking around at the way people are consuming content, especially the way that core sports fans who listen to sports content, right, are consuming content.
Right. The old adage, you're a sports radio station. No, you're not. You're a sports content brand.
Correct.
You do TV shows on Facebook. You do audio content on the radio. You do podcasts. You write columns. Like, you are a sports content brand. That's what people want. I touched on podcasting. That's something you guys have done really well. How has that evolved since you guys got into space? Because your Purple podcast that you guys put out is really strong.
Our Purple podcast, in terms of on-demand listenership, is actually the most popular thing that we do. And that's including, and that goes back the last couple of years. In terms of how many people access it per episode, mm-hmm. Purple podcast, for a number of reasons, Vikings, strong hosts, opinions, and all those things. But you're staring at a whiteboard here in this office. Look at the, so just read to the audience This is the 30,000-foot prism through which we view what we do here on a daily basis in all departments.
Positivity and optimism? Because that's you.
It is. It is. the one below it, the red.
Quality content plus telling people plus selling it.
And you can fit any distribution into that model, right? Quality content, tell people it exists, and then monetize it and partner with clients.
Right.
So I don't care if it's AM radio, FM radio, if it's podcasting, if it's short form, long form audio, if it's video, if it's social media, Instagram, it's all the same formula. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter what meme we're talking about. It doesn't matter if it's sports or if it's entertainment. We're talking about creating quality content, and that can mean a million different things, right? Telling people how to get it or what it is or where they can find it, and then ultimately making money off of it as an industry. And I find that, and I'm a host, right? I've been doing this for daily for almost a decade, and I've been on microphone. I'm now 33. I've been on microphone for 18 years. I didn't start thinking about that model specific to radio on a daily basis until maybe 2 or 3 years ago. And I find that a lot of hosts and producers, you really didn't have to think about it, because what was the valuable real estate in media? It was if you had a TV signal or a cable channel or a radio signal, right?
Right.
And that real estate isn't nearly as valuable as it once was. Now, there's all kinds of brands that are still absolutely crushing and dominating with that real estate.
Mm-hmm.
But what's that landscape going to look like in 3 years, 5 years, or 10 years? And if you're a host or a producer or somebody on the content side of things, and you just say, well, that's somebody else's problem to worry about, I wonder where you're going to be in 5 or 10 years.
Yeah.
You should start thinking about that.
Well, you should be thinking about, you have a 2-hour radio show, you have a 1-hour video show, you've got a column, you've got, you've got to be involved in being out, mm-hmm. doing events. I mean, you're a brand, and a brand exists beyond one channel, is I think the point you're making. I want to ask you said something about, the way you've changed your mindset in the last few years. And as a host, you're in a top 20 market. And we see this in radio. Most guys, they do their radio show, and then that's it. There are some guys, I think Twitter, there's a lot of guys who do a show, but they continue to engage with fans, and that's great, too. But they don't go, they may be contractually obligated to have to write a weekly column, you know, those kind of things. But what they don't do is they don't create images with audio clips and basically do what a social media brand manager would.
Mm-hmm.
You do that. And, obviously, that has to put a lot of extra time that you invest beyond your show. Why do you believe that's important?
So I think for a long time, and even to this day, most radio stations treat social media as a way to tell people to come back to their radio station. And I get that that's where most of the revenue is being generated. So if you have a big following on Twitter and most of your revenue comes into the radio, you should tell people, in your mind, right? We should tell people on Twitter to come over to our radio station.
Right.
And I'm not saying that you shouldn't do that as well. But guess what? There are millions of people on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook that are looking to consume content where they are. So why not deliver them content where they are? And we're not perfect at it. We're, in fact, we're just sort of in the infancy stages of trying to figure out what this all looks like. How do we deliver people the best content experience on those platforms and do it in a way where we're not making, full-time people who are working on 4-hour shows do an extra 2 hours, right? It's a hard matrix to figure out.
Our whole business is under that, situation. I mean, mm-hmm. you see some brands where, because of ESPN's people and resources, they can get into that space a little heavier. But when you go to local brands who are still under the mercy of the local ratings and local sales, and if it's a big brand with big numbers, you're not going to mess with that right now. But to your point, social media is where a lot of people take their cues and where they find out about content. And so if you don't have content there, yeah, you may be cool to interact with, but I'm probably not going to be exposed to things you're doing that may make me want to put on your radio show or go visit your website or support one of your sponsors who just happened to be included in a video you were doing.
Yeah, it's about building funnels to your really good stuff too, right? It's about how do you... Radio is this 24-hour linear clock. And so you can pack, if you wanted to, you could pack 24 hours of local awesome sports content onto a 24-hour radio band, but it's not three-dimensional.
Mm-hmm.
You can't stack volume. You can't. And that's what I love about this digital age is you can have, like for Purple Podcast you brought up, I believe during the season now we're doing, Matthew Collar is just a wonderful host, and he's doing 5 episodes a week. Well, one or two of those wind up on the radio, either repurposed in full or large chunks or interviews. And so to think of these, you and I have talked about this. Gary Vaynerchuk.
Yep.
You follow Gary Vaynerchuk?
Yep.
So if you're not following Gary, and he's a little bit over the top, brash. He's very East Coast, and so
can you wonder why I like him?
Right, exactly. And I think Gary was actually at the Jets Lions game the other night. I'm pretty sure he was front row with the Jets chants on national television. But Gary has his podcast feed isn't called a podcast feed. It's an audio experience. And so many times we just think of, well, a podcast is a podcast and radio is radio and video. No, it's all content and it's all delivery. So Gary V understands this times a million, and you might find 5 to 7 pieces of audio on his audio content feed. One of them might be a 30-minute more classic podcast episode. One of them or multiple might be videos with repurposed audio. Another one might be an hour and a half long keynote at a graduation ceremony, right?
Mm-hmm.
But this is where you can find the Gary Vaynerchuk audio experience on your smartphone. And, you know, for Purple Podcast, that's a little bit of our method to our madness there. Maybe we're pulling stuff from the radio. Maybe we're pulling audio from video, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the way the industry is headed, and that's the way that content creators should have their minds going too, right?
Everybody goes to a radio building. They do the same routine pretty much Monday to Friday, watch some things at home. Maybe they talk to some people. You're a guy I've seen at radio conferences, and I would always think, why is that guy at a radio? Isn't he the midday host on 1500? What's he doing at the Podcast Movement Conference? So you've put time in, and that's a tribute to Hubbard Broadcasting, which do a great job empowering their people to get out of the building to go learn other things to help their craft. I want to ask you about that, whether it's going to conferences or doing things outside of what you do Monday to Friday. What advice can you give to other hosts out there of what they should be looking at doing to ultimately get better at their craft?
Yeah, well, I was at the last 3 years I've been at the Podcast Movement Convention. It was in Philadelphia this last year. And I was in a session. You and I are both big wrestling guys. I was in a session where Bruce Pritchard, who's one of the most successful podcasters in the country right now, and then Conrad the Mortgage Guy is this amazing event organizer and the lead host of that podcast. And they were essentially opening up their playbook. Here's how we have created this amazing multi-pronged brand, this vertical that includes an audio product, and it's evergreen, it's storytelling, wrestling storytelling. It includes a website and video content and all these different sales components. And the guy who asked the most questions in that session, so there's probably 100 people watching this session, was Ross Tucker. Ross Tucker from, you know, football radio and Sirius XM and football podcasting. And he has, what does Ross have, like 5 different football podcasts? And I thought that was amazing that one of the, and some people probably only know Ross from radio. Some people only know Ross from podcasting.
Right.
But I think being curious about the industry and curious about how to reach audiences and build those communities in general, if you start with curiosity, you're going to eventually find the right answers in an era right now that's unprecedented. Is anyone can have a microphone now. Anyone can launch a social media account. You don't need a radio megaphone or a TV broadcast platform or a cable platform to generate 1 million Instagram followers or 1 million YouTube followers, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's simultaneously awesome and scary if you have worked in these traditional silos for a long time. It's like, wait a second, I can become a YouTube, like, not me, I'm not good at that, but like someone in theory could become a YouTube star without the leverage of a radio megaphone.
Right.
So if we all have these radio megaphones and these you know, TV blowtorches, shouldn't we have a 10-mile head start in the race to build these other digital platforms?
You would think.
And maybe the answer is, if you're not forced to think that way or forced to act in that manner, then it might take another 2 or 3 years. But I would say, back to your original question, I think it's just really important to have a curiosity about where all of this is headed so that you don't fall behind as an individual, whether you're a host or a producer or a sales guy, but also so that you have the best chance to reach the largest group of people in whatever. And I'm guessing most people who are listening to this are sports people. So from a sports standpoint, to reach the most sports fans in whatever it is that, whatever meme it is that you are operating in, right?
So on that note, when it comes to content creation, because you're going to go into a show and you're going to have your topics, you're going to get your guests, and you're going to be who you are. Your partner, Judd, is going to be who he is. There's personality characteristics. And, you know, I joked before about the positivity, and you've got a more glass half full perception, whereas Judd's got a more glass half empty, and which is good. That's character definition on a show is important. But I want to ask you about outside of watching games and, you know, working on asking shorter questions and things. What are some things you've done beyond radio to get better as a host?
I took an improv class 3 summers ago. One of my coworkers, Derek Wetmore, and I host a Twins podcast.
Okay.
And Derek does a lot of behind the scenes working with sales, and Derek doesn't come from a radio background. So I learned things from him on the non-radio side, and then he learns things from me. Not that I have all the answers, but on the radio side. And we said a few summers ago, I can't remember if it was recommended to us, but we saw that Brave New Workshop here in the Twin Cities was putting on 12-week classes for beginners and intermediates. And my first thought was, well, I do improv every day for 4 hours.
Please tell me,
right?
There's video of this somewhere.
There's audio somewhere. I feel like one of the public radio stations came in not knowing that, like, there was another radio guy in there, and they actually did a feature on our class.
Okay.
So there were 16 people in our class, and I went in over the top confident. Like, I mean, literally, I do a 4-hour show, and it's mostly improv, right? You set up your talkers, yeah. And it's just, you're just off the cuff, and it's organized improv.
Right.
This is going to be, I should have signed up for a more advanced class, right? Put me right on the stage. If you were to rank 1 through 16, these are lawyers and, you know, just regular 9-to-5 jobs and just people looking to branch out creatively, I would not have ranked in the top 5, maybe even the top 8 in terms of creativity and how good you were in that class in improv. I would recommend it to any host, any producer. If you're looking to just get fully comfortable with the unknown, and fully comfortable getting into talkers and segments and setting other people up, right? It's that yes and principle that improv is based off of, where you're constantly trying to keep the volleyball up in the air. It's simultaneously terrifying, but also invigorating. And one of the guys in the class, Judd Nichols, I'll throw a shout out. His name is Judd Nichols.
Wait, there's 2 Judds in Minneapolis?
There are 2 Judds, yes. There might be more than 2 Judds. He wound up thriving so much on this improv course. I think he went and took some of the other advanced levels too. He wound up on an NBC reality show the next summer called The Island. So he went from defense attorney 1 year later doing all these improv classes to being auditioning and then getting a spot on this NBC reality show. So, I mean, you meet cool people, and I think it helps your game as a host.
When you were doing improv, were you able to talk sports, or did you have to come up with jokes?
You're not really coming up with jokes. It's more they'll paint a scene for you, okay? So let's say you and I are going to do a scene together. And the instructor will say, all right, you two are in a grocery store. And Jason, you have to communicate to Phil the things that you want to buy without saying a word. and then I have to respond back to you. And so I have to then go get the groceries or whatever it is. So you have to signal to me. I need 2 cantaloupes,
right.
And I can imagine how you would signal 2 cantaloupes.
That almost sounds like that TV show. Whose Line Is It Anyway?
It is, yeah, except those guys are way better. Yeah,
yeah. Oh, that's great. I'm gonna hit you with some quick hits in a minute as we wrap this thing up. But I want to ask you, because you do still do a radio show, and you've worked with Judd for a while. So how have you guys built stronger chemistry and content on the air together? What have you guys done collectively to develop a better show?
That's an awesome question that I would love to think about for an hour. But off the top of my head, I would say getting rid of ego. Strip away ego. If there's something that needs to be talked about, let's talk about it. If someone is doing something that's shipwrecking a segment or something, let's not be afraid to, in a respectful way, talk about it. So that number one is just getting rid of ego. If I'm on a good thread or Judd's on a good thread with a guest, let them go 5 questions. Don't feel like you have to get yours in, right?
Mm-hmm.
You actually used a great analogy, but it's that point. What kind of point guard are you, right?
Mm-hmm.
Are you looking to dish out 15 assists, or are you looking to hoard all the shots? And I think there's a middle ground there when you have a co-host, and especially if you have a third voice on a show. But the second thing that comes to mind is just getting on that. I like to think of talkers and radio in sort of 3 bins. Bin number 1 is what happened. What are the things that are important? and anyone can talk about what happened. Oh, that for us, the Twins won last night. Right. Or actually, it's the Twins probably lost last night. the Vikings made a trade. Those are the things that happened. And anyone can sit in front of a microphone and talk about what happened. Bust open the newspaper and talk about what happened. Number two is, what do you think about what happened? Okay, now we're getting a little bit further along.
Now we're
right?
getting to the opinion.
Yep. Okay, what is it that you think about what happened? And most people can do that too. Literally anyone outside the business has a thought about what happened. But living on that third level as often as possible, which is, what do you think about what happened and how do you make it fun for the audience? How do you put a fun twist on it? How do you put a creative twist on it in some way, right? How do you do something that either makes people laugh or makes people think deeper or something that generates reaction from the audience? And operating as consistently on that third level as possible in your prep work, in your delivery, it's way easier said than done. And I commend the hosts on a national and local level that make it seem easy. Like, oh, you just pop on the mic and you had this amazing segment about something what a talent, right?
Right.
But there was maybe 3 hours of work and a bunch of people that that thought about how to make that great for the audience.
Yeah, it's not easy. All right, I want to get you out of here on this. Quick hits, four questions, the first thing that comes to your mind. The Mount Rushmore of Minneapolis sports figures, who's on it?
I was born in 1985, so my list is going to skew toward...
So Harmon Killebrew's getting screwed is what you're saying.
I love Harmon Killebrew. Never saw him play. He would Kirby Puckett's more legendary because right. he delivered two championships and has the iconic Game 6 catch and home run. So I'm going to pick one from each. I'm going to say sure. Kirby Puckett, Kevin Garnett. I'm going to go Randy Moss. Lou Nanny for hockey. Lou Nanny... legendary general manager, coach, player, North Stars. Mm-hmm. We got to go old school with one of them. So Lou Nanny, Kevin Garnett, Randy Moss.
So Rod Carew, Harmon Killebrew, Brian Bellows, tough crap for you guys.
Sorry. Mike Madonna.
Yes, Mike Madonna was pretty tremendous too. Best career advice you've received?
This is life advice from my dad. In one word, he told all the time, think. Philip. I would ask him, Dad, where's the remote? Philip. Think. Just figure it out on your own, right?
You were talking earlier about how things are changing. 5 years from now, where are people consuming audio most?
On their phones, which actually, we might even
probably
be getting
even now,
pretty
right?
close right now.
Yeah,
I think it's going to be a long time until, I mean, AM radio is losing steam a lot faster than FM radio. I think there will be a time where this idea of AM and FM, just as cars start to evolve, think about the dashboard in your car, right? And a lot of these are these new cars over the last 5 years have just touch screens. I think as 5G comes into the fold and upgrades over 4G and internet becomes widely available, it's everything's going to be an app and everything's going to be digital and you're going to have to be prepared for it in all areas.
And then the final one, you've seen probably the Players Tribune, how they have mm-hmm. Former players write a note to their younger self. Phil Mackey's advice to his younger self getting into the broadcasting business would be what?
I would have said be more aggressive during the poker boom so that you wouldn't have to be grinding out a radio career. There's so many things you can think about with content creation. Have fun. Have fun with the audience. Have fun with the people you work with. And culture matters. I think internal culture matters, and the culture that you put out to the public, if you're an entertainer, it matters. And that's how you build communities.
It's great catching up, man. Keep up the good work here.
This is one of my favorite podcasts, and I can't tell you how much I've learned from smart people. The fact that I even sit here for a half hour and I'm now in the same lineup of guests as some of these smart people that I've learned from is flattering. So thank you, Jason.
I'd say that was a pretty successful broadcast.
Thank you for listening to the Barrett Sports Media Podcast. To stay updated on the latest sports media news, follow Jason on Twitter at SportsRadioPD. And visit our website, sportsradiopd.com.